Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 121, and this week's guest is Martin Henson.
Welcome back to the Lenses podcast. It's show 121, and yep. I have two guests tonight.
Two guests.
You've certainly heard of Martin Henson of YouTube fame, and one you may not have heard of, someone called Corey.
Hello.
Corey Rifle. Corey.
That's me.
Corey Blunderbuss. Oh, Corey Cannon.
That's it. With two ends.
First of all, it's lovely to have you on the show, Martin.
Yeah. Thank you for asking me.
It's a huge pleasure. And Corey, it's lovely to have you on the show too.
I'll be in from time to time.
nice of you to drop in.
Thanks. How are you?
But you've been... I'm doing really well. Cool. We're having a bit of a heat wave in the UK, aren't we, Martin, at the moment?
Yes, we are, yeah.
We got temperatures on Tuesday, Corey, up to 40 Celsius, which is...
90?
100 plus, I think, in your old-fashioned temperature money.
Yeah. It's always like that here, though.
It's a killer for all Englishmen.
Oh yeah,
it is. We've had the windows shut all day today, and the blinds drawn, and the house has stayed fairly, not too bad. Too bad.
We're not really acclimatized to these temperatures.
No,
we're not adapted whatsoever. And one day it can be 19 degrees, and the next day it's 30. You just don't know where you are.
Yeah, so it's going to on Tuesday, Corey. It's going to be 42 degrees in London, and on Wednesday it's going to be
23 in rain. That's the UK, isn't it? Yeah.
So there we are. Anyway, look, enough weather banter. Are you have you been on your travels, Corey?
I have been all around doing stuff here and there, back again. You know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is it holiday or have you been with family? What have you been up to?
A little bit of both. Kind of some things taken off on myself for a day here or there to go do some stuff, and coming back.
Okay.
I have a roll of film I've been shooting. I'm trying to finish. Hopefully, I'm almost done with it. So, I have been shooting a little bit with my
realities.
Yeah.
Have you seen that James Guerin? You know James Martin, do you, from Realities? So subtle, the pinhole.
No, don't ring a bell. What's the name again?
James Guerin. He's the man behind Reality So Subtle, who makes pinhole cameras.
Oh no! I know the
Irish, Irish French,
the mad Irishman who lives in France.
Right, yeah.
So he's just introduced a camera that a few of our podcast listeners have been using.
Yeah,
which is I think he spoke about it when we last had him on the show, Corey.
Yeah,
he's made it now, and you can buy it on his website. So Martin, it's got a pinhole on the front.
Yeah.
And a pinhole on the back. So you load it with 35mm film, and you can, on one frame, just do a normal, straightforward pinhole photograph.
Yeah.
On the back, if you've got colour film in, you can then expose the second frame through the reverse of and do red scale on the second frame.
All right. Yeah. Clever,
so
it's
a red scale and normal pinhole.
Yeah.
And you could even do... multiple exposures with regular black and white film, I'd imagine.
You could expose front and back at the same time and see what kind of witchcraft that would
You could expose whatever's in front of you and then expose yourself taking the picture.
Experimentation. Yeah,
I was hoping James was going to send me one to review, but he hasn't. So. How quickly we fade from his mind.
I know.
He's probably sent Martin one because all the YouTube stars get sent freebies, don't they, Martin?
Yeah. No, I don't get nothing. I don't get nothing.
Yeah, right.
So
I'm waiting for my pucks from the solar can. Kickstarter. Those should be coming. Mm-hmm. Hopefully, they'll show up soon. And that's kind of all I got, kind of on the radar right now.
Well, you'll have lots of fun pucking around.
Yeah, I back them on the level, so I get five or six of the pucks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I have a couple of friends of mine who have younger kids, 8, 9, 10 year old. So I'm going to pass a couple of them out and let them do some experimentation with them. One of my friends, they homeschool, so they're going to go through and do the whole. the scientific side of, you know, refraction and the pinhole and everything, and like, and then take it outside and, you know, do a little class with it. So I think it'd be cool.
Excellent. Yeah, you don't want to introduce youngsters to film these days because, you know, it's so expensive that it's like introducing someone to a drug habit.
It's getting like that. It's getting like that.
Plus, they push the cost of
especially
film.
The Niels Kordak film.
Or slide film.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway, look, let's introduce Martin properly, and we'll do that. We'll ask you that question, Martin, about. I'm guessing you've been into film photography since you were knee high to a grasshopper.
Tell us
a little bit about that backstory, because people will know Martin from the YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And so tell us about your backstory, and then how you got into the YouTube channel, and I will be quiet.
How I started in photography.
If you like, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's going back a lot of years now. I started not serious photography, but my first introduction to photography was when I was about 12 years old. And it was when my mother and father at the time, they bought a box brownie, Kodak 127, you know, the Bakelite ones.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just fascinated. You know, you put the film in, take your pictures, nothing to set on those cameras, all fixed at aperture and shutter speed. And then send the pictures, send the negatives off. They come back, developed, and you see these pictures. And I used to look at the back of the camera and think, well, how does it do this? And that's really, really the fascination started for me then. And young kid is normally looking toy shops. I used to love looking in camera shops, you know, that sort of thing. So it really grew from that. And then as I got into my teens, I bought the good old Zenith camera. Yeah. A lot of people started the film journey with the old Zenith. Mainly shooting slides. I wasn't involved with the darkroom then. And I'd be about 21 when I set up my first darkroom. I've had a lot of darkrooms over the years. But that's when I set up the first darkroom. And it just went on from there, basically. And then I got to about mid-90s. I think it was pressures with family and business and such like. I just had enough of it. And I packed it in. But I think in some ways, one of the best things I did, really, because it gave me a break from it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was in the early 2000s, you know, when digital cameras were starting to come out.
Well, do you know, I can't... When was the first digital cameras? They were a bit of a joke, I think, but I don't know when...
Well, Kodak was the first, wasn't it, really?
Would that have been?
I think about mid-1990s, they used... they bought out it was a silly small sensor, and the camera cost about £50,000, you know. But that was the, starting it off with it. And then it sort of snowballed like technology does. And by the early 2000s, they were there for the general public to buy. And I thought, this is fantastic. And I ended up buying one. But I just couldn't... Because I love black and white, as you know, you'll see from the videos. I absolutely love black and white photography. But I could not get the look that I was after from a colour image, converting a colour image to black and white. And at that time, you know, the internet was coming. And I got to know, I don't know if you've never heard of a chap called Jeff Allo. He's quite well known in America. He lived on the edge of one of the deserts there. And he had exactly the same 2-megapixel camera as the one that I bought. And I used to look at his pictures and think, how does he do that? So I just got in touch with him, and he's a really nice guy. And he told me how he did it. You know, the conversion, now we got the contrast, etc. And from then on, I built it up from there.
So you were, you'd still abandoned the darkroom at this point?
I'd abandoned the darkroom film totally, yeah.
And you were, so you must have been using a pretty primitive version of Photoshop or something?
One of the first, Photoshop, yeah.
And some old laptop or computer or something, was it?
I think I had it on a computer. Yeah, we had a computer at home.
Well, like a 486 or something.
Yeah, it'd have been something silly like that. But you see, technology just advances, doesn't it, you know? But anyway, that was that with the camera. And I really started to enjoy it. And then as I built up and I got different cameras, digital cameras. But there's always that lure to me to use film again. I just love the process of it, you know. Yeah. That side of it, taking the pictures, not having a preview like you're doing it. I just found it not challenging to use the digital cameras. And I just love the look of film, the different choices of cameras and everything, you know. And at that time, keep in mind, cameras, they were giving them away. There were people were virtually giving cameras away.
Yeah, they were dropping them hard.
Yeah,
right,
yeah. Pardon? Yeah, they were. They were just giving them away. So that's when I slowly turned to film. But as I told you, Andrew, before, not in the dark room. I haven't set up a new dark room. I moved where I am living at the moment. I moved here a number of years ago, and I keep thinking of doing it. I have room to do it, but I just love the process of mixing the film side of it with the working on a computer. And I think I've got it off to a fine tee now. I can produce some really nice prints. I love printing on matte papers, you know, the fine art papers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's been a challenge over the years, but I've got there with it now. And I just absolutely love it. I think what it is really, you know, before the advent of internet and things, when you worked in a darkroom, it was a very lonely place to be.
That's how I like it. I don't want to be talking to people.
You have to find out everything yourself. Yeah. It's from magazines and things, unless you're one of these that joins camera clubs. I want that sort of person. So, it was when you've done it year on, for many years, you can just get a little bit tired of it. And that, I think that's what happened with me. So when this came, the computer side of it, and then I could use film, I could go out, take pictures, develop my negatives like I used to do, and then scan them. That's a totally big learning curve that I've had to go through as well. But I've got there with it, and I think I've got a nice system going, and it just suits me at the moment.
Yeah. You certainly seem to have. Corey, go on.
I was going to say, are you wet scanning or drum scanning? Like, what worked out the best for you?
I have wet. You've done wet scanning, but I don't see a massive advantage with that. I haven't seen it,
right.
But I have done it. To scan my 4x5 negatives, I use a flatbed scanner.
Cool.
The Epson V800. And then for all the other films that I use, you know, the small 35mm medium format, I have a Nikon 9000 scanner. It's a wonderful scanner.
Yeah.
And I get some really, really nice results, especially from the Nikon.
So tell us a little bit how you first got into pinhole photography. Then we'll take some questions from the Facebook group.
No, I love to do different things. As you know, I've got quite a lot of cameras, and I swap and change. It keeps my interest in photography.
Yeah.
And I just decided I tried one years ago, but I never were really successful in the dark room with it. You know, getting the prints out of them.
Yeah.
But with the process I'm using now, I just find it easier to do. And I thought I'll try a pinhole camera. Once I did it, I just absolutely love pinhole photography. It's the uncertainty, the anticipation. You know, you've no lens, you've no viewfinder. You've really to think about it. And when it does work, you get a real kick out of it. And it makes you want to go out and do it again. I just absolutely love it, pinhole photography. And it's a pure way of taking pictures, isn't it, really?
It is, yeah. The purest. That's why we love it.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And you can get some really interesting photographs. You know, like some people strive for, you know, like perfection in the pictures and that. Well, I've learned over the years, but it isn't always about that technical side. It's about the picture. It's about what the picture gives off, the feel from it, and I think. I've said this in a lot of my videos and that using pinhole cameras like the Holger, those type of cameras, they just add something to the picture as against trying to strive for this perfection, this perfectly sharp, beautifully, this tonal range going right through. I don't think you always need it. You have to look for something different in the picture. And I think the pinhole camera is a fabulous way to do that.
Yeah.
You know, you get this vignetting at the edges.
You get your feet in it sometimes.
You get your feet in it, your tripod legs.
I did
a while bit in the picture. So it's just a great way of doing it. And the thing is, you're creating something that's different. You know, we see it all the time, don't we, on the internet? Landscape picture after landscape picture. People stopping the lens down to f11 and, you know, sharpness from infinity to foreground to infinity. My way of thinking of photography is altered over the years as I've got older. And it's like I say on the on YouTube. You've heard of it, that old saying, I think it's Japanese, wabi-sabi. It's looking for the beauty in the imperfection. Yeah. Rather than look at the imperfection and say, no, that's, you know, that's not good, it's not right, look for the beauty in it. And that's what I see in pinhole photography.
That's what
keeps me interested in it, really.
Okay, well, that's a lovely introduction. Thank you for that. So, Corey, before I launch into some of these Facebook questions, which I think will take us down all sorts of pinhole-y type avenues.
Yeah.
Anything to ask Martin at this point?
No, I'm sure the questions are going to be.
Yeah. Okay, so let's see if I can work out the. I've sent these to Martin, so he has had a had a view. So I don't know what order I'm looking at these in, Martin. But
I only looked at them once. So, but anyway.
So the first. They're not all questions. Some of them are just lovely things about you. So I'll read those out as well. So you know, don't get too big-headed.
Now what?
Kevin Camp said, "A true gentleman." I don't know if Kevin asked any questions, but we'll come on to that. Vincent Sebastian. Now, Vincent, it will be a guest on the show, Corey. Vincent uses. He does know. It's just fitting him in. Vincent uses mainly Mike Walker's Harman 4x5 camera, yeah. Martin. And yeah. he does very distinctive, beautiful pinhole pictures. Most recently in, I can't remember where he lives. He's either in the America, I think he's in the Americas somewhere.
Yeah.
But he's photographing in sort of Catholic, Roman Catholic cemeteries, right. You know, where there's lots of icons and pictures of the dead and stuff like that. And he just produces some beautiful, very iconic work. And if you do look into the Lensless Podcast Facebook group, you'll see Vincent's work. Anyway, Vincent asks this, Martin, do you ever find yourself frustrated in not having a certain camera with you? If you do you find that going back and revisiting that scene with that camera gives you a more precise take of what you were drawn to originally? Thanks for all you share on your channel. So, do you ever find yourself frustrated not having a certain camera with you? And if so, do you then go back with that camera? And do you find that works?
I have done that. I'm a bit like this. I tend to use fixed focal lenses. Mm-hmm. So, if I'm going to go out with, say, a 50mm lens, my mindset's set on that. And if
somebody kill that cat,
yeah,
I know. Sorry, keep going. I'm sorry,
Martin. You'll just have to be a true professional. This is not like YouTube, you know, we're nowhere near as polished as that. You get cats, there'll be people wandering in and asking if we want tea.
Yeah, text going up phone. I don't know if you can hear them. as I say, you know, so if I do go out with the camera, I set my mind to using that particular focal length.
Yeah.
But yes, I think sometimes there might be something that you do see that you wish you had a longer lens or a wider lens. But you've just got to accept that you can't do it with the equipment you have. So there are times when I have gone back, I will say that, yeah, just to get more in the picture because I like what the subject's. So I would go back if it wasn't too far.
I think if you find a, I know you do a lot of your photography locally to yourself, and I think that's and I do as well. It's a really good thing to do, and it means that you can go back. You can go back when the weather changes. You can go back at nighttime. I know you've been doing some nighttime photography.
Yeah.
You can go back with a pinhole. You can make the most out of your local environment, can't you? With just by using a different.
Yes, exactly. You can revisit the same place, a different time, with different weather conditions, different camera, different focal length, and you'd get a different picture.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no reason why you can't go back. But in answer to his question, I'm never really frustrated with it, because I accept the fact that if I've got a certain length of focal length on my lens, that's what I have to work with.
Would you recommend someone starting out in photography, you know, got themselves their first manual camera, would you recommend them just sticking to one, say, you know, like a Nifty 50 or a 35 millimeter, and just seeing what it does for you?
Yes, I would say that, definitely, yeah. Just probably work with a manual camera, learn to use the aperture. You know, a lot of people, as I say, they just stop it right down. The aperture is it's a working tool. You know, you can create a different looking picture just using the aperture on whatever lens it is. Yeah, definitely. So I'd say, don't swap and change when you first. Just learn about the effects that the lens can give. Learn about exposure. But if you're swapping and changing from the beginning, you'll be all over the place, and I don't think you'll learn as quickly.
A bit of a pet topic of mine, and I've got a feeling you might agree as well, but feel free to disagree.
I'll tell you for now.
Yeah. You can always tell a Yorkshireman, but not much.
No.
Sorry. I didn't mean to insult you there, Martin.
No, you're right.
So I was going to say, as well as one camera, one lens, for a while anyway, stick with one film and maybe one developer as well.
Absolutely. Because again, you have to get used to a certain develop, how it works with the particular camera and film combination that you're using. So try to not perfect, but get used to those things, the tools that you've got. Try and get used to those rather than swapping and changing.
See what happens
if you're all over the place. You know, it can get really mixed up with it.
See what happens when you rate the film at a different speed, or or shorten the development time, or
absolutely
increase the development time.
Yeah.
And then changing your temperature has a lot to do with it too.
Experiment. That's the key word. That's the only way to learn, really, in my experience of life. You have to experiment with things to try different ways of doing things, and that way you do learn. Otherwise, swapping and changing, you can end up getting in a rut where things are just not moving forward.
And you can end up spending loads of money as well.
Yeah, you can, absolutely. Yeah.
Especially these days.
Spending loads of money whether you get it right or wrong.
And I think as well, I don't know if it really applies to this, but I think it does, that it's very important, I found, that you have to try and set yourself projects. So you've got a given camera, film, you know what developer you're going to use, what you're going to photograph. Now, again, if you're just going out willy-nilly, shooting, I'm talking about going out with the intention, not on holiday, because obviously you're going to take different pictures. But if you're going out with the intention to take pictures, set yourself a project, because that focuses your mind. It teaches you so much about things. You look at things more carefully, because you think to yourself, I'm going to set myself a project of 12 pictures. I often do this on YouTube, you see. 12 pictures and of the similar, of the same thing. And again, it teaches you more, because you're thinking more about it. Your mind's not wandering from one thing to another. Use the same camera, stick with the same film at first. There's no reason why you can't change later on, but until you're learning, and stick to certain projects as well. That is a big help.
I like projects. Not everyone does.
Not everybody does. But
I like them. My trouble is I have too many on the go at any one time, well, and I get a bit stressed. Like I can get a bit stressed by it, Martin. Yeah. The truth is, man.
Yeah. Some people will. Yeah. They don't have to be big projects.
No, that's
true. You can say I'm going to photograph, I don't know, waterfalls or whatever. Iconic buildings around where you live.
Yeah.
And just concentrate on those and keep the mind focused that way.
Or I'm going to take my pinhole camera with me, and every time I stop in a cafe, I'm going to put it down. Or
anything.
Corey could take his to work. Yeah. It might be a bit difficult.
Yeah.
Plonk it in the corner.
Yeah, it just has the effect of focusing you on one subject. And I think in time, you end up coming you can come up with better pictures that way.
Okay, let's move on to the next question. Jimmy Hickford asks a serious question and not so serious question. Which is better, Martin, and why? Yorkshire or Lancashire? No, I don't know.
Don't ask me that. So,
For the listeners who are overseas, you know, like Corey, like Americans and other strange people, just to explain why Jimmy would ask that question, Yorkshire or Lancashire?
Well, there's a lot of, I don't know what they call it really, but we've got the Pennines separating.
It's like the Great Wall of China.
Yeah, Great Wall of China. And plus we've got Manchester United, you'll have heard of those, football club. And we've got Leeds United, which are in Yorkshire. So there's all that as well to take into account.
And then there's the War of the Roses going back.
Then there's the War of the Roses. Absolutely. Absolutely.
which no one's ever forgotten, I don't suppose.
But the thing is, it's got to be Yorkshire because it's known as God's County. So
it is, yeah. They speak a bit funny in Lancashire as well.
They do, don't they? I have to say Yorkshire anyway.
I'd
be shot if I didn't.
You would. Okay, so Jimmy goes on to say, if you had to choose one pinhole camera, you know, we're getting into touching on what we've just been talking about, one pinhole camera, one film, and one developer combination.
Yeah.
I want to talk to you about different developers because James Lane was asking a question about that. We'll come on to that in a minute. So one pinhole camera, one film, and one developer combination for, say, a project.
There you go.
What would it be and why?
I like the larger format pinhole camera. I've got a 045 pinhole camera, and it shoots 4x5 sheet film. And the reason really is I can just go out and shoot one foot. Like I did, was it my last video? I'm not sure. Where I photographed some daisies.
Yes, it was. That was the one where you got your tripod leg in, wasn't it?
Yeah, one sheet of film. And that was it. I was done. Yeah. Could come in and get it developed. Whereas I have another zero image pinhole camera, the 02000, but that takes 120 roll film. So that would be a camera which I have done before. I've taken on holiday with me.
Yeah.
You know, and it's so small. If I do go out with somebody, might be on a workshop or except whatever, I'll take the small one, but also take the large one. But if I had to choose one camera, I think it would be the 045. I don't think you get the better quality. We're not talking lenses here. We're talking they all look the same from a pinhole camera, really. But it's just it's the convenience of using it.
Well,
plus there's another thing.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know anything about the 045. It comes in panels.
Yeah.
So by removing panels, alters its focal length. So I can go from ultra wide angle to wide angle to what you call wide, with one camera, and I find that very useful at times. Yeah.
It
makes you to experiment a little bit more. Plus, it has zone. What they call them? Zone. I've never used them.
Zone plates.
Zone plates on inside. I have to try those. I've never used those yet.
But no, me neither.
No, I've never really liked the look of that. A bit too old, but. I will give it a go one day. It'd have to be the 045.
Okay.
And what else did he ask?
That's a camera. If you had to use one film and developer combination, because I've got a supplementary question to ask you from James about this. Talking about film and developer combination.
I think it would have to be Fuji Across.
Okay.
Yeah. But it just depends on what you're photographing, but as an all-round film, it really is a fabulous film because of its lack of reciprocity failure.
Yeah.
That, you know, you can shoot it at, I think it's 2 minutes, and there's no reciprocity failure. After 2 minutes, you just half the time and add it onto your time. If you've got, 4 minutes, it will be 6 minutes.
Yeah.
And in fact, some people don't even do that. And it's a really, really nice film. So I think it would have to be Fuji Across. Because sometimes, you know, you'll know, because you've used pinhole cameras, if you put filters on them, say a red filter, you're going to be using, or an orange filter, you're going to lose two stops of light. That's a lot of light to use for a pinhole camera, and you can get into some really long times.
Yeah.
So, yeah, be Fuji Across.
Have you been using the new formula for that?
Martin, or are you still using like old stock?
Say that again. The new.
Yeah.
The new what?
The new Acros, because they discontinued it for a while, and then they came back.
Unfortunately, they don't do it in the 4x5 sheet film now.
But
before it went, I bought quite a lot of it, so I've still got a stock of it in the fridge. So I'm careful how I use it.
Yeah,
but,
cool.
But I will use. I do use it. In fact, I actually bought as well the Fuji Across, not the two, because that went out of production, but they fetched that back in. So I've still got a lot of rolls of that all in the fridge. So, and I've still got quite a bit of it left. So
is the new stuff? I don't
think it's any different. I think it's made by Ilford, you know.
Right.
I think it's milked by Harman.
I think I probably did know that.
I heard that somewhere, but it's bit. I can't see any difference with it.
Okay, that's good.
That's good.
I think I've got one or two rolls lurking around, but I keep forgetting about it, to be honest.
My second film, I think, would be Ilford FP4.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I like them all, really. But I think for a versatile film, probably Fuji Across.
Mm-hmm. And so I'll lump into this question, because he asked about developer. James Lane from Zone Imaging, the UK man behind marketing 510 Pyro and other things, plus he runs a little lab, I think.
Yeah.
James asked about... well, he said to me in a separate conversation that you've got a top three of developers.
Mm.
And he said it was Diafine. I've seen a video using Diafine.
Yeah.
And he said PyroCat HD. And, of course, he would have to say 510 Pyro.
He would do it, yeah.
Well, so would they still be your top three, do you think?
Diafine is definitely... It's a wonderful developer, Diafine.
That's a two-bar.
Yeah, it's lasts forever. I'm using Diafine in the same bottle mixed up 3 years ago, and it seems to get better. And I've got stock solution left in bottles.
So do you mix both powdered chemicals into two separate stock solutions?
Yeah, part A and part B.
And do you reuse each stock? Do you replenish any of it, or just keep reusing it?
Yeah, I replenish the part, the actual activator.
Right.
Part B, because. Is it part A? I'm getting mixed up now. Let me think.
Part B, I think, isn't it?
I think it is. Yeah. Because it gets soaked into the film.
Yeah.
But every so often, I'll take out probably 100 mils and just add 100 mils.
Okay.
Because I usually keep about 1,000 mils. Mm. But it's a great developer. People have not used it. I mean, I'll give you an example. I went to the Lake District. You'll have seen the video with that Lomo camera.
Yeah.
The LA120. And I was inside this tunnel, and I thought, I love the shape of these. They look like corrugated sheets coming round. Well, when I pressed the shutter button, I was using the Ilford FP4 in Diafine, you can rate it that at 250 ISO. You know, it gives it a speed increase. And I got these two red lights showing, and it's showing that I've got a slow shutter speed.
Mm.
So all I did was just up the ISO. And I've still got a really good negative, one with plenty of shadow detail. It's not like pushing a film, you know, when you can push films up to higher. You can, with Diafine, it's an amazing film. It's you don't have to regulate the temperature exactly. It'll develop anywhere from 70 to 85 degrees Fahrenheit. You can put different films, different film stock into the same tank. So if you go shoot, say, FP4 and you've got Ilford HP5 or whatever, Tri-X, you can put them all in the same tank and do them exactly the same time.
Mm. I think it's been a long time, Martin, since I've played around with two bath developers. When I used to mix my own chemicals, but I started off with, what was one of the early publishers? Stockler's developers, Barry Thornton did a two bath one.
Thornton. A friend of mine just be using that. He quite likes that. But you don't get that speed increase.
Right.
I've shot Tri-X in Diafine at 1200 ISO on 120 roll film, and it's so fine grain, it's unbelievable.
Right.
It's an amazing film. So that is one that will be my top three.
Yep.
PyroCat HD. I do like the Pyro developers. I'm talking from my workflow of developing and scanning. So it might be different if you're working in a dark room, but for that workflow, I like PyroCat HD because it's a compensating developer. If you use it in the semi stand, not normally use fulls, but semi stand, you get this adjacent effects at the edges, and you tend to get sharper looking images. And it's a very economical developer. Have you ever used it?
Yes, I've used PMK Pyro, which you have to aggravate quite vigorously. PMK.
Yeah, I've not used that one. No.
PyroCat HD. Yeah. We've also on our other podcast, Simon Forster and I, we interviewed Sandy King.
Oh yeah, Sandy King. Yeah.
And
the developer of it.
Yeah. 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 And so I used PyroCat HD until fairly recently. Mm. I liked it quite a lot with T-Max 100.
Yeah, it's really good in T-Max.
But I've used it in all sorts of things. And then I got drawn in, as many people do, to the 510 Pyro recently.
Yeah.
And I've developed quite a lot in that, but I've not done
do
much.
Like
well, I've not done much printing with it yet. So right, I'm kind of the negatives look good.
Yeah.
But I don't notice a really dark stain, deep stain on.
What fixer are you using?
I'm using Maresh Alkali fixer.
I use an alkaline fixer. It should have a nice brown stain to it.
Mm.
If you're using an acid fixer, it'll remove it.
No, I'm not. But I did mention it to James, and he said, it's a fairly subtle stain.
It's more subtle on a PyroCat HD negative. It's quite a pronounced stain on the when you use 510 Pyro. Mm. It's a stronger stain.
So I wonder why. So I've been using it mostly on Foma Pan, to be truthful. I need to compare it. We'd go back and compare it with some others.
Yeah, I think you do, because it might not be apparent when you just look at it.
No.
If you compare it, you might see it more.
So
I do know that, excuse me, 510 Pyro does give a deeper stain.
Okay.
Hmm. But I think as well, the Pyro developers, and especially PyroCat HD, they're very good for stand development. Really good. I found them really good.
I've been using the five. What the trouble I had with PyroCat HD, Martin, was the lack of what seemed to be consistent information on developing times. I think you have to put a bit of work in, don't you? Whereas I was. You
know, well, can I give a plug here?
You can, yes.
Well, I've got one forum. It's called the Black and White Learning Forum, digitalmonochrome.co.uk. And then there's another one, a sister one, which is run by my friend Ian Barber.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that's 5x4.co.uk. Yeah. Now, on that, at the top on the page, it'll give you times, all the times, which have been, Ian set these out, Ian Barber, from information, I think from Sandy King. I might be wrong there, but all the times are there. Try not to use the times on the big, massive dev chart.
No, I have used Ian's site before, and I found that to be the most helpful out there.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've read that long article that Sandy published on PyroCat HD, which just blows my mind, really.
Yeah, I tell you, can get some good info from that chap. You'll have watched him. I know. I don't know if you've interviewed him, John Finch.
Oh, the Pictorial Planet.
Yeah, he's pretty knowledgeable guy.
He's good as well, isn't he? Yeah. No, but, we haven't interviewed him.
So that would be my second developer.
Okay.
I've been trying to stick with those two developers because you're swapping and changing all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I've used HC110 a lot. That's a great developer.
Yeah.
But then I got given a bottle of 510 Pyro through somebody else on YouTube. I think James Lane gave it to him and said, look, give it to who you think. So he sent me a bottle, did Roger Lowe, shoot film like a boss, he called.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I gave it a go, and I quite liked it. Once I got used to it. And if you use it in the sort of semi-stand method, you get some really nice negatives. The only downside to it for me, and I've told James this, it's like treacle. I don't know if you found this.
Yeah.
And measuring it out, you can't use a syringe.
No, I've had to keep it. I started using it in the winter time, and the darkroom was cold, and I just couldn't get it out of the bottle at all.
It's awful.
I bought it in the house. And even with an oral syringe, which is quite wide.
With a dumb syringe, you mean? A wide one?
Yeah. Even that's really hard.
No, it's very difficult. And the other thing is, and I told this James this a few nights back. He was asking me what somebody had told him I'd stop using it, but I hadn't done. I just swap and change. Yeah. It's messy to use. It stains everything. I don't know if you found that.
It does.
Everything.
I use it in our utility room, and I've got a fairly old stainless steel sink, and just as well, really, because if I used it in the kitchen, I'd make a mess.
With Pyrocat HD, it's a staining developer, but it's nothing like that. So that's the downside for it. But the results I've had from it have been really, really, really good.
Where would you use a staining developer, and where would you use something like Diafine or even HC110? What specific applications?
Well, exactly. To use Diafine is where, if it's on a dull day, I can get the upscale of the ISO, and I'm still going to retain that quality.
I did some
tests outside with Diafine. I think it was Ilford FP4, and I started rating the film at 100 ISO. And I went right up to 1200 ISO on the same subject. And do you know, you couldn't see a lot of difference between. So we're actually overexposing it and you keep going up with it, but it still produces good negatives. So, like, if you're going out with an Ilford FP4 you rate it at 250 ISO, that's what they recommend. I think it's a good speed to use, actually.
You could use Microfin, I suppose, couldn't you?
You could, but it don't work the same as this stuff. Right. It's different how it works.
Okay.
Microfin is just a one-shot developer, isn't it? Where Diafine is a two-part. Yeah. You know, you've got your developer, then your activator. So it's a great developer. I mean, rating HP5 800 ISO, it's absolutely super with it. It's a great, great developer.
Okay. Well, that's...
So of the three developers, that's what I've been using. But the two developers that I really do like is Pyrocat HD. It's easy to use. It's to me, a very reliable. I never get any problems with it.
Where are you making your own up, or are you sourcing it?
No,
it can be difficult to find that.
It can. There's somebody that I know who has the raw chemicals. He sends them to me, and then I mix it up in powder.
Right. I'll have perhaps get a name of your drug supplier.
Meet him in the corner.
Martin, it is
hard to get hold of.
Dan... a few miles down the road from me was, until recently, Wet Plate Supplies.
Oh, yeah. He's backed in, aren't
they? Yeah, and...
I used to get it from there.
Yeah. So he started making it a few years ago after I asked him to.
Yeah.
And because he is literally 4 miles down the road, so you can...
You want to find out what ingredients is. If you've mixed it yourself, you should be able to do it.
No, I haven't mixed it myself. I got put off because the powder is quite nasty, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it is. You've got to be very... Yeah. Well, they recommend breathing apparatus.
I think I find it easier, Martin, to just go out in the right kind of lighting conditions that I like, that I know my ID 11 1 plus 1 is going to work fine.
Yeah, and exactly.
If the lighting conditions are rubbish, I stay at home.
Yeah. There's another developer, which I do love, I forgot to mention that, they're both the same, really. Ilford's ID 11. Our Kodak's D76.
Yeah. Well, Martin,
the problem is they're getting expensive.
Well, yeah, but I use rotary development now for most things, and so you use very small quantities, really.
Yeah,
that's
not so bad. Yeah.
And I'm not exposing tons of film now, partly because it's expensive, and partly because I want to concentrate on the printed image, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Of course you do, yeah. No, I understand that, yeah.
Anyway, questions. Look, thanks, Jimmy, for those questions. That's great. And we got diverted into James's as well. Are you are you keeping up, Corey?
Yeah. I've never used the dye-based stainer.
The pyro.
Yeah, I've never used any of those. I've used Diafine, you know, D76 and everything else, but I haven't.
I'm going to try Diafine because I know...
If you can get hold of it. And, you know, it might seem expensive, but... In the long run, it looks out cheap.
Are you familiar with the Italian chemical maker who started Bellini?
Yeah, they do. They're supposed to do it similar, but I've never tried it.
They do an equivalent. They call it something else.
Yeah, no, Duo or something, isn't it? Bellini Duo. No, I've not tried that.
So I'm using their colour RA4 chemistry at the moment, and it's very good.
You've got to try things. So
you can find anyone listening, certainly in the UK... and I guess Italy. Bellini chemicals are quite inventive. They've got pretty much a chemical that matches any other standing. Yeah. And they've even reinvented some old ones, I think, as well, Martin.
Yeah, but worth trying. There's just one thing with diaphane. It's not really good for large format photography because you can't do a plus minus development times with it. It's 4 minutes and that's it. 4 minutes in each one. And that's it. So
that's another good reason for only going out on the days when you know you can get five or six stops on your.
That's right. Exactly.
On your negative.
Yeah. So that's the downside. And I have heard people say that the other thing as well is it produces negatives that scan beautifully.
Yeah.
I read that. But
in the dark room, some people say you get really flat prints, but I don't know. Mm. I've not tried it in the dark room.
Well, I might have to give it a go. Next question is from Greg Obst. I never know how to pronounce Greg's surname, even though he's been a guest on the Large Format Photography podcast. Greg, wondering if Martin sees an advantage for any reason in choosing a pinhole camera made from natural materials over a 3D printed or a plastic pinhole camera.
I think I prefer natural products. I don't know why I say that. I just think the feel of it. I don't know how Ilford's a plastic out there. I've plastic film cameras.
It's more down to what you like.
I love the look of the wood on them, and you know. So
The thing is with the Zero 2000, that was my people will know because I've spouted on about it enough.
Yeah,
that was my first pinhole camera. It's now set aside because the pinhole broke.
You can buy them off them, you know.
Well, yeah. Don't get me started on that. I've not had a very easy job getting any sense out of them.
I'm gonna
probably just get one from James Guerin, who makes beautiful pinholes.
Yeah, that'd be fine, wouldn't it?
And shove it in.
Yeah,
yeah. When my Zero image was new, it was so lovely. I was frightened to take it anywhere. You know?
Was yours the shiny one?
Yeah, the wood one.
Really nice. Really nice.
And you don't want to drop them on the floor because they'll break as well.
Yeah.
But anyway, other than that, they're just beautiful. But as you know, mostly it's down to the pinhole, isn't it? Really.
Why I think Zero Image are probably the Leica or the Hasselblad. The pinholes are wonderful on them. You know, the way they're made. So I'm led to believe, and from the results I get, I tend to maybe believe that. To what other I've seen other people produce. So.
And I suppose, and sorry for all those 3D printers out there and users of plastic, do we want to be creating, you know, more plastic legacy for the planet?
Exactly, no, not really, no. No.
Ooh, we're going to get some hate mail over that.
I was going to say that. Direct all the comments towards Andrew.
So James Sniffin says, he's the man. You're the man.
I'm the man.
Wendy Chapman says, he is the best.
Good on you, Wendy. Yeah. I've never met her. She's a pinhole photographer, isn't she?
She does digital work as well, but she does.
Oh, does she? Yeah, right.
She does a lot of pinhole. She seems to spend all her time traveling. You know, she's a lady of independent means. She came here. Next thing I knew, she was in Sweden and various parts of Europe.
Yeah.
Anyway, Alec Payne.
Alec, I remember that rings a bell.
Yeah. I think he spent a day with you.
He did, Alec Payne, a pinhole workshop.
And I'm in discussion with him about coming here to do some colour printing. So
that'd be lovely, he's a nice guy.
Alec said, and you can follow him certainly on Instagram, I think.
Yeah.
Alec said, I took this picture of Martin. He hasn't shared it, he just said he took this picture of Martin with my phone, obviously.
Yeah, he did.
When I spent a day with him.
Yeah.
Pinholing and learning the ropes. He's a lovely man, and his YouTube channel is very good. Questions. What's his favourite shot, with or without a pinhole?
With or without a pinhole?
Yeah, so
any camera?
That's a tough question. Is there one image that you've made with any type of camera over your few years that you've been photographing that you just think, that's it? You know?
Yeah, I think there is one. Yeah, it all springs to my mind. I was in Whitby quite a number of years. This was taken with a digital camera. Mm-hmm. And there was, do you remember that picture of those guys sat on the in America, sat on the scaffolding eating the dinner?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was, that was when they were built. Yeah, the steel workers when they were building the Empire State Building.
That's
it.
Yeah. Well, this is totally different, but similar. There's a pier that goes out in Whitby itself, and on top of that, there was people, and they're all sat down looking down. And then I saw what they were doing. They're all, they had little line fishing. So I took this picture, and it just reminded me, I don't know why, but it just reminded me, because they're all sat, on the angle that I took it, it looks like a beam that's just going out,
Cool.
And they're all sat on there. So yeah, that one springs to mind, but I've taken thousands of pictures.
Yeah, well, that's okay. That one will do.
Yeah.
That's an interesting example how either subconsciously or consciously, there's nothing new under the sun. We're all influenced by those who've gone before.
Yeah, of course we are.
What books we've read, what images we see on YouTube, you know.
Yeah, we are, yeah.
And so on.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, so you've got another question. Who does he admire? Well, I hope you admire me and Corrie.
No, I can't say that, can I? I admire Corrie and you.
Yeah. Okay, next question. I think he means photographer, not just some paid three.
There's so many. I do like, is it Van Ho?
Yep.
I love some of his work. It's wonderful. I love Michael Kenner's work.
Yeah.
He really inspires me.
Van Ho does those black and white, high contrast shots of Hong Kong, doesn't he?
Yeah, but the light that he's dead now, I think. Yeah. The light that he captures in his pictures is just stunning. I'd love to see him in print. I love Ansel Adams' work. You know, there's lots, really. Mm-hmm. But I don't get sort of, I don't try to emulate anybody, you know. What they do for me, they instill me. I might, you know, be a bit fed up and this, that, and the other. And then I start looking at their pictures.
Yeah.
And there's certain people I think, I'm going to go out on my camera. It makes me want to do it, you know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah. I think it's really good. I'm a huge lover of photo books. I think just to have them and to look at them for inspiration.
Inspiration. It can give you inspiration.
It can.
And I think Kenner is very clever how he does it. You know, but having said that, I think I think if we could get to some of the places he went, we would come up with some great pictures as well. But he does do it, and he simplifies photography.
He does. He's a very zen-like approach.
He does
photographs in Japan.
And all done in the dark room. He does it himself. Yeah. I do like him as well.
Okay, excellent. Has he ever shot colour, Pinhole?
No, never. No. Don't shoot colour, full stop.
Just black and white, right?
Just black and white. I've no interest. I did have once, years ago in my dark room, I had, I was telling you, Andrew, when we spoke, a colour enlarger, where I struggled was getting the colour balance right.
Oh, you should come on one of my workshops. I'll teach you.
I'll have to book one because I don't do colour. But I don't used to print my own eyes, you know, the job.
I think Alex, last question, you're getting your money's worth. I think I think he's talking about me here. Can he do a video with Andrew for his channel? No, I've got a great face for radio.
Yeah.
See me on YouTube.
Yeah.
You don't want to be seen in public with him.
There's a wonderful contributor to the Lenses Podcast Facebook group who doesn't do so much Pinhole.
Yeah.
But it's mainly Holger. I'm doing him a disservice because he does do Pinhole as well. James Murray, who's also on our guest list. James does some beautiful Holger work.
Yeah.
Can you please ask? His is all hybrid as well. So he's scanning and then he produces these beautiful images with a slight sepia tone to them.
Yeah.
Can you please ask Martin, who are his photographic influences, dead or alive?
Mm. Dead or... Well, I've just said it, really, haven't I?
You have said something.
Next. Next.
So well, I refer the Honourable Gentleman to the question that we've just answered. Howard Pan says, Martin is great. Your fans are here, Martin.
Oh, yeah, too.
I found him at first when I was looking for more Pinhole-related material. In one episode, he shot flowers with his 4x5 pinhole, and I've followed him ever since. Well, that's not a question. He just—it's another one. It's another one of your groupies. Yeah, your groupies. We'll call them Hensonites.
Henson groupies.
sounds like a precious stone.
yes, a Hensonite. Right. Vincent Sebastian, who asked a question. This is going to be a good show. Pat Sowers said. Oh, this is just—I don't know if I should read all these. You're never gonna—you're not gonna fit through the door. Fantastic! He's great, this guy. I love Martin's YouTube videos. I didn't know you did YouTube videos. Martin.
No, I've only done a few. In fact, my next one is the 100th video.
Mm. Is it?
Yeah, yeah. And I started—you know—I started it in the lockdown.
Yeah, I didn't. We didn't get on to. Okay, so let's just leap out of the questions for a minute. And how did you get into the YouTube? Because I think I asked you that. We didn't get on.
It was just that in the lockdown, I couldn't work within our family business, we were stuck at home. You know, when it first came out, everybody was quite, you know, really locked down, weren't they? You know, and I was just bored, and I thought so I got my iPhone, and I thought I'll do a video, and the first one I did was, I think it was on a photographing a teapot, I think it was, showing camera movements on large format, and you know, and I thought, I enjoyed this. So I just carried on doing them from there, but I was struggling a little bit with the phone, and then one of my youngest son bought me a GoPro, and that really changed it all for me. Then I thought, this is great, this is it, and that's how I started into it. And and the thing is for me is, you know, I mean, when you're getting on in years and you've been there and done all these photographs, you know, for many, many years, you get sometimes a little bit lost of what to photograph. You know, what do I do with the photographs? I can't hang all the pictures. What I do, you know, what I take, you know. So YouTube has been an outlet for me. Going back to projects, I'll set myself a project and I'll video me doing it. Yes. So it gives me a reason to go out and take pictures. Do you follow what I'm saying?
I do. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's been great for me, therapeutically speaking, as well, to keep my interest going in it.
Yeah, I think the internet, I think we touched upon this when we spoke a couple of weeks ago, Martin, the internet for us, people who have been doing this a long time, when we've been through the years when, you know, you were just working in isolation and the only interaction I really had was weirdos at the camera club, you know, to be truthful, or, you know, where you just became fixated on competitions all the time.
Yeah.
The internet has, funnily enough, done wonders for analog lovers.
It really has. It's opened up the mysterious side to it to the masses. It's not mysterious. It's easy.
Yeah.
It's just using digital is so clean. It's so quick. I'm not pulling digital whatsoever. It's a wonderful way of taking pictures. Really, when you think of it, it's ideal. But you know, what suits one doesn't suit the other.
No, that's true.
So I've sort of, as I said, I've gone best of both worlds. I've got the fun of using my film cameras. Developing film and working digitally.
This may be a question, or I might just be making it up. What's your sort of work? I think it was a question on your workflow. So you're scanning using an Epson 800 for large format, or Nikon.
Yeah.
And you've got your scanned image. Are you scanning as a JPEG file?
TIFF. They'd have to look on my it's a TIFF, but it's a RAW. In other words, when I use ViewScan.
Okay, do you? Yeah.
As software, and I don't do any adjustments whatsoever. It's just it's like just doing a RAW scan. It's off a digital sensor, so there's no adjustments made, and then when it comes into Photoshop, I convert that using another plugin called Color Perfect, as daft as it sounds, for black and white. Right. And that really does a really good job of controlling the highlights and the shadows. And when you come out Color Perfect, you get a really good Instagram. Instagram.
Instagram. Yes, I know.
I tried to develop a method of working where it's sort of not a million miles in the process from a wet darkroom, where, you know, as you know, when you're doing black and white, you're mainly working on well, you're working on tones and contrast, aren't you?
Yeah.
And it's contrast, really. Contrast affects your tones. You know, the higher the contrast, the less tones you've got. The more, you know what I'm saying? So,
yes, that, the tonality, you've got a less steep line graph, you've got more tones, but you've got a more grey image.
Yeah.
And a lot of people really, there's a beauty in having that sort of tonality, but it doesn't always grab the attention,
like probably
a more sort of whitewashy type picture does.
Yeah, probably better seen in print, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I think so.
Sort of picture. So it's a very simple process, and it's all carried off. If I could get a program, editing suite that just had curves with it, and I could put a color perfect into it, that'd do me. I can control all the tones just using. I can dodge and burn using the curves.
Yep. I think you touch upon your workflow as well. If people go back to your videos, I know I've certainly seen you using them.
Yeah, I like to show
them. That's wonderful. Neil Dorman says, not a question, you can't beat the old guard with oodles and oodles of experience. forgotten more than some know. don't want to be, we want to, you know, there's a bit of a thing going around at the moment about trying to keep out gatekeepers, Martin, you know, people who want to just preserve this hobby how dare you, you know, come into this and...
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think the more we can all do to...
Are you talking about people that...
I'm not going to name names.
No, I'm not naming names, but people that look at the way, say, the way I work as not real photography?
Partly, yeah. Anyone that has that kind of view...
Or doesn't
want to share information readily or criticise the way people do things, you know?
But, you know, for me, it's just an alternative process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've got to be, you know, if you don't do this and you don't have fun, there's no point doing it, is it?
No, there's no point whatsoever, no. There's not point. And the way that I print, I get some really lovely prints. I've sold thousands of prints, thousands over years, from an inkjet printer.
Yeah.
And I've had one person, who came to me and said, are your prints made in the wet dark or on the printer? And when I said on the printer, he didn't want it. It was very nice, you know. Mm-hmm. But other than that, no, but it's all about the picture.
Yeah.
It's all about, if somebody likes the picture, they're not interested in how it's made. They want that picture. It's as simple as that.
It's true.
Pat Sowers, we've answered this question. Andrew, could you please ask Martin the following question? If you had to keep one Pinhole camera, one film, what would it be and why? Well, we've done that one. And I think we're on the last page of questions. So I don't actually know how many there are. They're probably all sycophantic.
What was the one somebody on about? I don't know, D76?
Yes, we're coming on to that.
Oh, right. I didn't
know. Bill Orford says... His is one of the few channels I watch.
Oh well, thank you.
I don't know whether this is a typo. I get thinking of a question, but I think it will be about stand development. He sort of mentioned stand development hasn't asked a specific question, but you've kind of touched on that. I think you've talked about semi stand as well, and there's lots of information out there. Particularly with the pyro type developer, you can go to
that's on my YouTube channel.
Seen you do stuff on stand development, and there's lots of info out there, particularly that Ian Barber site as well.
Yeah.
And have you ever used Rodinol for stand development?
No.
That's not a question I'm just asking. A lot of people use that, don't they?
I've used a Rodinol before,
I've used Rodinol. Well, not the original one.
Well, whatever. It's all the same formula,
yeah,
I think.
Different name.
It's a very, very nice developer. You get that grunge with it, as they call it, you know, that higher grade.
Do you know what used to be a lovely combination? It's counterintuitive, but it actually didn't produce much grain, really. It was 35mm Fuji Nearpan 400
beautiful film.
In Rodinol.
Do you know that film was a beautiful film with Fuji?
That was a beautiful film, and that was a lovely film. That was one of my favourites.
I wish you. One of the films I wish they'd fetch back was a beautiful film.
Yeah, but they're not going. They're not going. No, they won't, unless Ilford can reinvent it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So here's probably. There's two questions, so this one might take a while. I don't know. Gary Ramsey says, "Hi, Andrew. Would you mind asking Martin if he has any suggestions on testing developing chemistry that may be exhausted? Also, can ID11/D76 be used to develop paper negative?" So that's the first bit. Is any suggestions on testing developing chemistry that?
It just depends on what he means. Does it, I mean, you're testing your developer. Your fixer. The best way is to have some film that's exposed, end of a 35mm. Place it in the fixer and just check its clearing time.
And then double it.
And if it doesn't clear, it's exhausted.
Yeah.
That's that.
For developing, really, I suppose then you come back to, well, if you're using a one-shot developer, then you just throw it away, don't you?
If you're
using a stock solution, then you can go to, like, if you made up a stock of ID11 or D76 and you can use it as a stock developer, you can, there's lots of others you can do. And the PDF sheets, if you Google Ilford ID11 PDF, it'll tell you that you can do 10 films.
Yeah.
And you add 10% after each film or something to the time, doesn't it?
That's right. Yeah. Because it's exhausted it.
Yeah,
but I think the best way to test a film is just to do a test shots. You know, if you've got a 35mm camera, take 5 or 6 frames, open the back of the camera in your dark room, cut those frames out, and develop them.
Yeah,
and then you know that your developer's working okay. But for me, I think you just get an idea when you know if you're going to go off and it's. If you're spending a day out taking pictures and you're not sure about your developer, don't mess about, make some fresh. That's what I'd say.
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure.
ID11 to develop paper? Well, I've never done it, but I mean,
you can't. I mean, no, you could develop. You could develop. With either for developing paper.
Well,
you're going to find it.
Ilford made that. Do they still make PQ Universal? That was a
yeah.
Hydroquinone and phenidone PQ, probably.
Yeah, he did, but there was. But I mean, it's funny enough, I had a friend who just set up a darkroom. It was someone who came from workshops, and he's got back into film. The first time he's used film, he set up his darkroom, and he rang me up one night, on the WhatsApp, and he said, I'm struggling. Why? He said, I just can't seem to get the... They seem really low contrast. And I said, we're going through. So I said, what are your developer using? And he was using, it's a liquid ID11, what they call it, DDX.
Oh, yeah.
He was using that to develop his, and it was developing them. But
his paper.
But they were lacking in contrast. It was very slow to develop. But you can, I know for a fact you can use D76 or ID11, but... it's a slow because it's got low activity as a
might
film.
might be quite useful for paper negatives because they can they can be quite difficult to control, can't they?
It's worth trying with paper negatives if you're going to use it as a developer to print paper. You need to put, I think it's sodium carbonate.
Andrew Sanderson, he talks about diluting it down. You know, if you can use Ilford's paper developer, dilute it down.
Yeah,
you know, and so it slows down the
the
activity.
Right. Whereas with D76 Island, it will have a lower activity. So obviously, it follows that if you're going to develop a print that should be fully developed within a minute or a minute and a half, it's going to take a lot longer.
Yeah.
So to increase it, as far as I understand it, I think if you put sodium carbonate, I don't know what amount you would have to, but that would really speed it up. So it can be done, but I don't see any advantage in really using it, other than, like you say, trying it with paper negatives because you're getting that lower contrast.
Okay, supplementary question from Gary, who's in Adelaide. Good day, Gary.
Yeah, good day.
any suggestions for good subjects and methods for interesting pinhole photos? Well, I think you kind of touched on that, haven't you? I think go out, with an idea in mind.
Experiment with it. Just experiment. Yeah. Don't be thinking just eye level with a pinhole camera. Mm-hmm. Some of the best shots are pointing upwards to exaggerate shapes. Look for shapes, you know, pointing downwards rather than just straight on. Are you with me?
Yeah. Just. Well, Corey's a great fan of just ditching the tripod, aren't you?
Yeah, don't even use it.
I mean, there's a guy on the YouTube.
Will.
I can't remember.
Will Gudgeon.
No, not him. They call him Harry. He comes from Finland. I can't pronounce his second name. And he puts his pinhole camera on his boat when he's on the lakes. And he gets some fantastic pictures. Mm-hmm. You'd think it'd be completely blurred, but he doesn't. I've seen people use them on skateboards.
Yeah, well, again, Will does that.
Yeah.
So, you know... experiment. The more you experiment, the more you're going to enjoy it.
You are, yes. Have fun. Mm-hmm. And lastly, has he ever... This is lastly from Gary. One more question off this. And lastly, has he ever tried 35mm sprocket photography in a medium format pinhole camera?
No.
No, never tried it. No. Me neither. I've tried 35mm. No. I've used 35mm film in a medium format lens camera.
No. I haven't done that. No. I don't know how it would work, really, with its... with its coverage, but
No, we haven't. So give it a go, Gary, and tell us how you got on.
Yeah, exactly.
love the podcast. Regards, Gary. Paul Smith says, and I think this is definitely the last question. My favourite YouTube channel.
Ooh.
There you go.
There you go. Thank you, Paul.
My question is about his. Oh, there we go. I think we've answered this. I knew there was a question about this somewhere, so sorry, Paul, I've already asked this. My question is about his analog-digital hybrid workflow.
Yeah.
What gear does he use to scan 35mm, 124mm? Well, we've answered that. With it's the Nikon something or other, or Canon something or other. And that's not very helpful,
I don't know if people would be interested, but...
any special tips or tricks? There you go. So give away all your secrets. Come on and give away all your secrets. That's what we want you to do.
Tips and tricks. If you're going to scan, try and watch my videos. And scan them as a raw.
Yeah, and buy a print.
Buy a print, yes. And, you know, really, the actual negative in this process is only as good as the scanner. The Epsons do a really good job, but they're not going to be like... what you would produce in a dark room, something larger.
I've got a question on that.
Unless the drum scanned.
Yeah. I've got a question, Martin. So for scanning and for printing, often folks tend, with black and white film, folks historically, old codgers would say, well, actually, you're better to overexpose and to underexpose because you lose shadow detail and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can end up with a slightly more dense negative. And people like Roger Hicks used to love a dense negative. Yeah, but to be honest, you shove it in an enlarger.
Yeah.
And I know the denser the negative, the longer the developing, the more grain you could possibly have. But with the bigger negatives, it's not such an issue.
No.
But for scanning, if you have an overly dense negative, will the scanner still see into those shadow areas?
Well, I'll just give an example of that. I went out one day to some local rocks with, was it the Holger?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was, that might not be the Holger. But anyway, no, it can't have been the Holger. Yeah, no, it was. I was doing long exposures.
Yep.
I was using the Holger with the ND filters on it. And I inadvertently got it all wrong. I overexposed Tri-X by 4 stops. Overexpose it by force. So you can imagine how dense the negatives were. The Nikon managed to scan it. Mm. They were quite grainy, but the pictures were fine. They had a bit of character to them, you know. I found for scanning that slightly overexposed negatives work better.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you're getting those shadows open. That's where they do struggle, scanners. If you don't get those shadows open, when it scans, if it doesn't see anything in those shadows, it'll just scan as black. So you get this black blotch, which don't look good in print, especially in print. So if you can open up, get your exposure right for your shadows, maybe just allow a little bit more exposure.
Make sure you've got enough detail in the shadows so you've got some detail there and not completely blank.
Yeah. And then when I print my work, I've got an Epson... 3800 large format printer. I've had this printer about 14 years. Now, I don't print through that software. that comes with it, you know, the Epson software. I print through something called ImagePrint. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a RIP, what they call a RIP, raster image processor. And, you know, it's the best thing I've ever bought.
Okay.
Whatever I see on screen or whatever you see on my pictures, you're going to be exactly the same, if not better, when they come out of the printer.
Brilliant.
So, yeah.
Martin, that's the end of our questions. Yeah. Corey, have you got anything else to add before we look to draw the podcast to a close?
Go watch Martin's YouTube channel.
Yeah, so
I'll send you money.
The checks in the post. Give yourself a shout out for where, if folks don't already know by now that you have a YouTube channel.
Yeah.
What social medias do you?
I'm not really good with all this, but I'm on Instagram.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I'm not on Facebook.
So you're not a member of the
I'll have to look into it.
Podcast Facebook group.
No. I'm on Instagram and YouTube, and that's it really.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
And now you've been on a podcast.
Are
we your first podcast, or have you been on others?
No, I've never been on a podcast before.
There you go.
I've done quite a few camera club talks.
Yeah.
They're doing it more and more via the internet.
Oh, the Zoomy things or whatever.
Yeah. Zoom, which is quite nice.
We'll launch you into fame now you've been on the Lenders podcast.
That's lovely. Brilliant.
Martin, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for coming.
Yeah.
Thank you
very much.
I've enjoyed it. I'll talk all night about photography. I just love it.
That's all right.
Corey's got to eat probably because he's come back from wherever he's been.
Yeah.
What time is it there?
It is 4:12.
All right. In the afternoon, obviously.
Yep.
Yeah. All right. Martin, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. No problem.
Let's stay in touch. Thank you. Yep. Bye-bye now.
Thanks a lot.
Bye.
Bye.